Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod, part of Full Press coverage. My name is Kyle Senra. Joining me is one of my co-hosts, Jesse Hall. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Back to Packer football week, so doing good.
The week off, right? I mean, which earned, well-earned bye week by the Packers, which, again, mentioned that all last week, and I'm still mentioning it now. Packers got a first-round bye. Hooray. It means a good team, but now we're done. We're past that. It's the divisional round. And we're going to talk a bit about what happened in Wild Card Weekend. Next episode will be more the actual divisional round preview. But there's a few rants I want to make today. So thanks listeners for joining for all that. Thanks, Jesse, for being witness. breaking news. I guess it's not really breaking, but it's news. This just happened today. The Eagles have fired Doug Peterson. I heard some reports as he was, you know, they were parting ways with. Is he stepping down? But no, they fired him. Which, I mean, he won a Super Bowl a few years ago as head coach. What, we're talking four seasons ago?
Less than that, wasn't it? Was it 17?
Yeah, 17, 2017, I believe. And I noticed one thing that's being talked about in response to that is also, why is the general manager, Howie Roseman, not being fired? I mean, we'll probably touch more on the coaching changes, because, I mean, obviously the Eagles aren't the only team to fire their head coach this year, since the season's been done. They did take a little longer. Most teams did it immediately the next day. Some of them were doing it, I mean, pretty sure the Jets announced before the game that they were firing Gase after the game, so... At least those, I mean, we already knew that was happening anyway, but they didn't really need to tell us that. It seemed obvious, I suppose, with the record. But I guess with Peterson, it took a couple more days, but ultimately they came to decision to part ways with Doug Peterson. So, Jesse, what do you think about all this? The Eagles firing Doug Peterson and, to the surprise of some, not firing and retaining instead general manager Howie Roseman.
Yeah, first of all, it's crazy how fast, it's... What can you do for me now, league, right? So it's crazy how fast things turn, you know. I don't know. Yeah, so, you know, it's easier to move on from the coach instead of blow up the roster, right? And it seems like, you know, that was a scapegoat. You know, granted, you know, Peterson, they said kind of lost the team, whatever. But, yeah, this team is talented. You know, I think the major part was, you know, what was going on with Wentz. You know, and essentially I think Peterson took the fall for it, you know. Fans might think, yeah, it's time, you know, let's fresh face all that. But yeah, like I think the GM is a problem too, right? You know, so how does one get a pass and the other doesn't? I don't understand. But yeah, that's a good roster. And I guess, you know, the last 2 years they've been playing subpar. So the ball's got to drop somewhere. Is it fair? Probably not. Is it the right choice? We'll find out.
My perspective, I think the Eagles made the right choice in both instances. So here's why. Let's start with Roseman, because Roseman's been with the Eagles since 2000. I went and looked it back, and I remember interviews with him after the Super Bowl. He talked about he got there when Andy Reid was there. And one thing he learned from Reid was to always be prepared. And I feel like he, you know, when did he take over? He took over 2010. What 2010, what a great year to talk. think about context. Like that's when, like, I guess for Packers fan, think about that context. That's when Rodgers last won a Super Bowl, right? So since then, he has been in charge of this team, although there was a period where he wasn't. When they hired Chip Kelly, for some reason, ownership, there's a battle on who would get full control, and ownership sided with Chip Kelly suddenly.
It was a disaster.
And it was. It was an absolute, Chip Kelly had no business being a general manager. Right, like it's as ridiculous as what the Texans did with Bill O'Brien, and like the personnel changes they made, and they switched out a lot, and they lost a lot of players. So even when they got rid of Chip Kelly, Howie Rose, it was kind of almost a slap in the face, right? Okay, Howie Roseman, we think this guy who's never had any experience at all doing this job of general manager is better suited to actually be the final decision maker on personnel on this team, not you, even though you've had this job for, I guess, what, at that point it would have been like 5-6 years. And then as soon as he leaves, it's like, oh yeah, he was actually bad. Can you come back and do your full job again? And you know what? Roseman, he played the good soldier the entire time. He didn't, when he was taken, that power was taken away, he didn't complain. I mean, sure, he complained, but he still did his job. He didn't request to leave the organization or look for other opportunities. He stayed with the Eagles. And then when Kelly left and they gave him the task, okay, yeah, he's completely butchered this franchise. Can you please rebuild the team and, like, even better than you did before? He didn't bat an eye on that challenge. Yes, he did. And he built that. I mean, there was a point when they won the Super Bowl in 2017. There was maybe no end. I don't think Nick Foles is that great. Like, it's not as if they had a miracle. Oh, my God. Thank goodness they had Nick Foles to back up Carson Wentz. The team structure, the offensive line, the defensive line, I mean, they literally had the philosophy of control the trenches. That was all done by Roseman. Like, this entire team was built by him. And, yeah, the offensive line, it's gotten a little older. They were injured like crazy this year, though. Man, I would not, like, deep as the Packers' offensive line was, if they had as many injuries on the O-line as the Eagles did, they wouldn't be a top five unit in adjusted line yards or top six in sack rate. They would be down to where the Eagles are.
Yeah, definitely. Like, that's put it nicely. Like you said, the injuries on that line were catastrophic. Like, you went from, like what you're saying, you know, you had maybe right guard was the only spot where it's like, he's decent. But every other spot on that line is Pro Bowl or all pro talent, even with Peters getting older, you know. And remember, they were going to move on from him, too, and go with Dillard starting. That's how high they were on Dillard. So we didn't get to see him play, obviously. But if you're making that move, they're built in the trenches. I will say that team, you know, for what they have weaknesses now, you know, there's spots where they're weak, but they are built tough in the trenches. And that's how you win. I mean, I don't. All the X's and O's and everything else. If you're good in the trenches, you're going to be competitive. And that's Philly, you know.
So my point is, Roseman has a history of building a team from what looks like a pretty bad roster. And yeah, right now it's not looking great. But I mean, I have faith that he'll be able to turn it around because he's done it. We've seen him do it to get to where the team won a Super Bowl with their starting quarterback injured, right? Again, which is the structure of the team. And maybe, yeah, that defense definitely needs work. Especially the back end of that defense, the secondary, not very good. But I mean, there's quite a few teams that kind of have that problem too, where like with the Packers, like there was a tour this year where the Packers were just playing awful secondaries and they were just destroying, decimating, no chance at all. And I mean, the Eagles are one of those teams, but they weren't the only one, certainly. So to put, yes, has he done the best job of general manager these last couple of years? No, but we've seen him perform as one of the best general managers in the league. So I don't understand why everyone's suddenly on the train that Roseman's not a good GM. Like, I think the teams that have most success are patient. Let him ride through this. Let him wave through this. And now to my other point. The idea was Carson Wentz is the franchise guy. Jesse, asking you right now, is Carson Wentz the franchise quarterback for the Eagles today, the day after the wild card round?
I don't even think he's going to be an Eagle. So I really don't. So the answer would be a definitely no from me.
And I mean, none of us saw that coming. Like, we all thought Wentz was the guy up until this season. So Wentz, poor play, that's not on Roseman. Like, up to this point, Wentz was the franchise guy and suddenly just dropped in play all of a sudden. To me, you can't put that on Roseman. Yeah, the contract sucks, but the contract was for what Wentz performed a couple years ago, and this drop-off is completely unprecedented. So Wentz's poor play, I don't think, should go on Roseman. And you know what, Roseman, before Wentz even played bad this year, had the backup opportunity, drafted Jalen Hurts. So Roseman's still making good draft choices and good decisions that are guiding this franchise. He's got a task here with Carson Wentz figuring out what to do. So I don't understand where all this talk of Roseman should be fired is coming from.
The NFL is a weird league, you know. Should he be fired? No, you know, you're right. He shouldn't be, but I can just see where people, you know, say stuff like that and get excited because it's like, hey, you know, 3-4 years ago when they were dominating, people forget quick, and they just want to throw blame around and blow it up. And your point was 100%. The teams, you know, you look at the Ravens long term when they had Ozzie Newsome and all that stuff, you know, had there forever. Be patient, build correctly, be competitive, put yourself in the playoffs. Even though, you know, a lot of people say, well, the Packers get there, but they never get to the big one. I say all the time, it's hard to win the NFL, but if you're in the dance consistently, you have a chance. And the patient teams always seem to be there. The big knock on Cleveland forever was, you know, hey, we're going to do this. And all of a sudden it failed for 2 years and they blow everything up. Well, then you're starting over again. So obviously it's going to suck for a while, you know. And now I think they got the right pieces in play where they might have long-term success. And it starts with the GM.
And I mean, part of it is them winning the Super Bowl. He won Executive of the Year in 2017. And my thing is, you fire Roseman. What's a guarantee you're getting a general manager that could reach that potential that he's brought this team to before? I'm banking on it's him. He's the one who's done it before. Why go with someone else?
Well, that, and if somebody's available, A, they're inexperienced, or B, they were fired from somewhere else too. So that's usually who's available.
Yeah, unless you've got someone in-house that you think could really take over. But, I mean, so far, the only guy that's replaced him was Chip Kelly, and that was an unmitigated disaster. So, like, the last time you tried to replace this guy, it didn't work. So why try again?
Yeah, I agree.
Doug Peterson, however, now I have a totally different perspective on this. So we've seen the Eagles' offense when, you know, Carson Wentz's first 2 years was incredible, really. I mean, especially his second season when they did end up winning the Super Bowl. That offense was operating so well. And then it's like that very next season, you almost started to see it. And this year, it really bottomed out. I don't think Doug Peterson was the reason they had success. I think that was offensive coordinator Frank Reich. And if you're asking me where the mistake was on Roseman, the mistake for Roseman was hiring Peterson to be head coach. Instead, he should have hired Frank Reich to be head coach. And now you've lost Reich to the Colts, and now you're kind of stuck without the head coach. Like, it seemed like, by all accounts, Frank Reich was the one who was teaching Wentz and helping him develop and getting him, because again, Wentz coming from the FCS and North Dakota State. Shout out to Kayla in North Dakota. But, you know, that's a small school. So for him to get so NFL ready so early in his career, I think a lot of that has to do with Frank Reich. And so I think Peterson, he was the head coach. So he wins the Super Bowl, gets success. But I don't really think he deserved the praise on him necessarily. I think he put together a good staff, like good on Peterson for identifying Frank Reich. But also Peterson hasn't brought in another solid offensive coordinator like Frank Reich to help Carson Wentz develop even further since then. So that's a failure on Peterson. I mean, that's the head coach, right? If you, like, part of your job as head coach is also strong personnel. And since Frank Reich has left, Peterson hasn't found a good offensive coordinator. And I don't think he's I know he calls plays, but I don't really think he's that smart of an offensive mind. I think he's a better leader of men, organizer of the team. But when it comes down to making football adjustments in games, there are some very questionable decisions this year. Constantly. I think there are some losses this year that you can pin on Peterson. And I actually see it very similar to Anthony Lynn. And how Anthony Lynn, this team has had success before with the Chargers, but there were mistakes this year that him as a coach made, and it cost them, I wouldn't say cost them the game, but it cost them chances at games multiple times. And if Lynn was let go, to me, I see Peterson as the exact same light, only, you know, the Eagles better success than what the Chargers had. But really, take out that Super Bowl, I think Anthony Lynn, Doug Peterson, pretty close. So the fact that both got fired, to me, seems fair.
Yeah, a lot of stuff you covered there, a lot of good points. First of all, when you're successful, guess what? You start losing your staff. So that staff with Frank Wright and stuff like that, one thing you can say about that staff, they were leaders of men. The team rallies around them, and you could tell by what kind of people they are and how they lead. You know, now I don't know enough about the Eagles to say, you know, I think Peterson's not a good offensive mind, but yeah, once Frank Reich left, you know, you kind of saw Carson Wentz was playing really good. Matt LaFleur, you can say a lot about too, where his stops around the league, you know, these quarterbacks, you know, Matt Ryan was an MVP when he was there and stuff like that. You know, Aaron Rodgers was huge with losing his offensive coordinator a little while back, you know, and all of a sudden look at yesterday, right? So there's a lot that goes into it. And you're right. I think the head coach more has to, you know, divvy out all the duties and trust his staff. And then you lose an offensive guy like Frank Reich, who is really good. We know that. I mean, that's a fact. He's a good coach. You lose that piece, it's hard to make up for that. And yeah, Wentz, you saw, really regressed. And it was just kind of a snowball effect, right? Like when it rains, it pours, everything started to go down. You start seeing where the weaknesses are, or where, I wouldn't even say weaknesses, but where like inconsistencies and the crispness of, you know, just play just kind of went out of control. Now, at the same time, did they think, you know, hey, you know, Carson Wentz was on an MVP, you know, looking season. This kid's got it figured out. We're not going to miss a beat. And then, you know, coming back from that, he's never looked the same since. You know, the arm talent's there. We all know that. But all the other mistakes, it's like, okay, was it coaching? And to your point, I think a lot of it is.
Now, to a certain extent, like, I could have maybe saw the argument where you keep Peterson and you blame it all on Carson Wentz and say, he regressed so much, we thought we had it with him, and now he's suddenly turned the other way and he's gotten worse. And you just wash your hands of it and say it was all the quarterback. Like, I could have almost understood that if they decided to keep Peterson, but The Eagles, I say some games this year were lost by direct decisions on Peterson. The overtime game against the Bengals, he could have handled that so differently. The Eagles could have won that game. They probably should have won that game.
To his credit, he's taken blame for a lot of his problems, but then you saw it repeat again. It's one thing like, oh man, I messed up. That one's on me. And then 2 weeks later, you have the same problems. It's like, okay, is this you effed up this week? Or is this, hey, this is who you are, you know? So, and I think maybe that's, and again, I think, you know, Wentz, is, it might be gone too. You know, you bring in a new coach, they might just say, you know what, we're going to go a totally different route. Who knows? They might even, if they have a shot at a quarterback they like early, they might even grab a quarterback. You know, usually new coaching staffs go with their guy, whether it's right or wrong.
Whoever's head coach isn't going to get to make that call, I don't think. That's on Roseman, right? Like, so I think that's whoever's coach the Eagles is going to have to understand that. You may want to come in and pick your quarterback. I'm pretty sure it's Jalen Hurts. I mean, right?
Yeah, I mean, the coach coming in too, depending who the coach is, he might, you know, say, yeah, you know, in the interview, if I'm coming in here, I might want my guy. That's all, you know, behind the scenes stuff. And, you know, they could say straight up, you know, that's not how we're going to do it. So yeah. it all depends, you know, and even from the top when they, you know, we're, it's not time yet to even talk about the draft. What if one guy blows him out of the water? You know what I mean? And it Hurts is really cheap. That doesn't cost a lot of money for them. They might invest in that. Are they going to? I'd probably say no, but if there's a guy there that they like, I can see it. You know, they pick what, sixth?
I suppose maybe, but I don't know. I just have a hard time seeing any of those guys as better than Hurts, because you've seen Hurts do it in the NFL. I mean, like, and Hurts was a pretty good prospect coming out. If not for Tua taking over that job at Alabama, and if he was the full starter at Alabama, I'm sure he would have gone in the first round. And so, with that evaluation, like, I mean, for the Eagles, I feel like you've got a franchise quarterback with a second round pick. Like, that doesn't really happen. So why not, or maybe not franchise quarterback, but at least you're a legit starter for now. And if, you know, he develops into your franchise guy, even better. I say, why waste that? Like use that first round pick to get a play. Like we talked about the holes that they need to fill, either really anywhere, offensive line, receiving weapons, secondary. Like I think you just, I don't know. If there really is a quarterback there, trade down, accumulate. Cause I think they've got it with Jalen Hurts. And that was another thing too. The season finale against Washington. Right. I mean, and I know, and I obviously Peterson's not there next year. So he really doesn't care about next year, which is even more baffling to that decision now. But to me, like wanting to evaluate Nate Sudfeld can be like, you legit can want to evaluate him, but that should never come in front of, oh, this, you know, our, again, potential franchise quarterback who barely played this year. Shouldn't he get as many reps as possible? So that was another decision that I thought, like, what are you doing, Peterson? Like, how is that? How does that make a difference? Like, wouldn't you want more Hurts, as much Hurts as possible? So that was another one that just, his judgment in a lot of cases really has me questioning to why he was even hired in the first place, honestly.
Yeah, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but yeah, you make a good argument there where, you know, they might have had the wrong guy, you know, head coaching.
Speaking of the wrong guy, all right, now the real rant begins. That was just a light conversation, folks. This is the actual rant now. 2020 All-Pro list released. And I mean, I remember one of my friends was texting me and his initial instinct was, wow, you must be so happy. I'm like, what? Oh yeah, I guess there are a lot of Packers on the list, right? But like, because my initial instinct with this is when I first just quickly ran through all the names was, oh, this is awful. And not because, you know, a lot of it is good. I will say mostly All-Pro list makes sense. But there's certain positions, one position in particular, I just don't understand. So in terms of Packers who made the All-Pro list, Aaron Rodgers, first team All-Pro. Devontae Adams, first team All-Pro. David Bakhtiari, first team All-Pro. Corey Linsley, first team All-Pro. I got like that. And then a couple second team All-Pros. We got Jaire Alexander, as well as Za'Darius Smith, who was omitted last year from the All-Pro list, surprisingly. So good to see Za'Darius make it this year. So first off, I mean, I think it's very deserving for all the Packers players that were on the list. You know, four first team All-Pros. I would argue it should have been five. But I mean, I think, like, obviously all those that did make the list were certainly deserving of it for the Packers.
I know where you're going with this, but one of them's on the second team where, we could argue, Alexander maybe should have been on the first team. Now you look at the numbers, Howard had 10 picks. That's why he's there.
He can't replace Howard. After doing that, as much as you could even argue Howard's not even the best corner on his team, but if you get 10 interceptions, you just have to. So I get that.
And that's where I was going, because the numbers, Alexander, they didn't test him.
Did he even get 10 pass attempts thrown his way?
That's exactly. So, I mean, if you shut down your side of the field and they don't even want to go that way, you're not going to get those. The other one I think is more, name recognition, not saying he's bad, but, maybe Adams abuses that guy this week. But Alexander should have probably been first team. Yeah, he got second, but yeah.
I would say that the reason he should be ahead of Ramsey, of Jalen Ramsey, who is also the first team corner, who's, to be fair, Ramsey has had some games where he has shut guys down. I mean, up until this wild card week, he had really shut down DK Metcalf. But there were also games where Ramsey, I remember week one, Amari Cooper had a monster day against Ramsey. I was surprised. And Amari Cooper was making really tough catches. Amari Cooper usually drops the easy catch. So for him to be making really tough contested catches against Ramsey, and it was he was just getting open at will. And I mean, I don't think any receivers abused Ramsey like that. And I think since that game, first game of the season, no training camp, I think he kind of maybe, it was a little too much for him, but I think since then has rebounded. And I think maybe the writers who voted are seeing more of that. But to me, Alexander didn't have one game like that. That's why I think he should be. But he's on the list. I'm not really going to complain that he's, because I do think Ramsey is a great player and probably played well enough that you could make the argument he should be first team All-Pro. But maybe nitpicking that he didn't, that Alexander didn't have any bad games, and whereas Ramsey did. Very rarely, but still did. So that's why I thought, I mean, the voting was close. 25 votes for Ramsey, 18 for Alexander. So, people were tight on it. But I would have, and maybe this is just my Packers bias, but again, I just think, you're right. It took me a little bit to get to it, but I do think Jaire Alexander right now is the best cornerback in the NFL.
Yeah, and I don't have a problem with that because it's hard to grade that position because, like you said, you got all those picks from one guy. Well, they're going your way. You really can't grade because you just shut guys down and they don't even want to throw it your way because you got them blanketed. So at least he's on the list. I don't have a huge problem with it because that is so close where, 10 years from now, especially if Jaire keeps going the way he's going to go, people are going to say, hey, all three of these guys really are stud players because I think Howard's really good too. And well, they got a good secondary pair there too, but, yeah, between Ramsey and I think Ramsey and Alexander got a lot of the same kind of swagger into their game. So I get it. I get it. Do I agree with it? Probably not. But I get why Ramsey got it and Jaire's on the list. So moving ahead.
And again, I am trying to go back through. Was there one position where I didn't really understand it? There really is just one. There's only one position where both of the top guys, it's an offensive line spot. So there's only one first team, one second team. It's not like wide receiver where they had six this year. All it took was one. If you got one vote, you made an All-Pro list if you were a wide receiver. But specifically left guard, before we get to left guard, was there any other position, Jesse, that you thought you really didn't understand why it was these players that got on the All-Pro list and not certain others?
No, I don't. I don't have a lot of argument with it. I maybe at linebacker, what Tampa Bay has done down there, David and White. Maybe Bobby Wagner's a beast, a Hall of Famer, but I don't think he had the year like those two guys did. But I'm being nitpicky on that again too. So I let's just go into what you're talking about, unless you got something to say on that.
I kind of like it for linebacker. I thought at times Wagner played like the best linebacker in the league. I think maybe some injuries this year, maybe not the most consistent, I think, but there were times where he's playing and you saw, and I mean, I thought, again, we'll do the wild card recap later, but in the wild card game against the Rams, I thought the Seahawks defense was the best part of that team, which is the first time we've said that all year. That's usually the part that's been letting them down. And I thought Wagner was having a heck of a game and it really showed why. So when you perform, I guess, enough, and you show the flashes, I understand it. But maybe you're right. Maybe it's getting a little hypocritical when we're talking about the name value outweighing the production a little bit. Because I know that's my argument in the next one.
Yeah, and to be fair, you know, White and David are both second teamers, but that duo right there is scary. And that's not taking away nothing from Wagner, because that guy's done it for a long time. He's a staple. I mean, even when Kuechly was in the league, I always said Wagner's just as good. You know, I caught a lot of heat, you know, being in North Carolina here, but it's true. He's that good. But like you're saying, to that point, David was unbelievable in that Tampa Bay game. So yeah, nitpicking. They're all on the list. So
yeah, that's we could just quickly run through. So Fred Warner actually got the most votes at linebacker. Considering all the injuries the 49ers had, he was the rock that made that defense be able to play all year. So, you know, no objection. So, well, I guess is there three? I think it's Warner, Wagner, Leonard as the first team.
Yes, sir.
And again, Darius Leonard, one of the best young linebackers in the league. Did he play better this year than Devin White did?
No.
Those votes were close. Leonard had 18, Devin White had 16, which is a big gap. Like, it's 39 for Warner, 35 for Wagner. So it's like those two really had it. It seemed like, you know, a few more, you know, a couple votes go a different direction. White's on the first team, not Leonard. So it seems like voters were really close on it. I almost wonder if there were certain voters that split it between White and David. Whereas really, it should have really been both.
I agree. Yeah, it's crazy.
Anyway, so enough about, it's funny. I feel like the one team I want to defend most on this, on the All Pro list outside of the Packers, is the Buccaneers. Funny enough. We may see why in a couple weeks. But yeah, left guard. Okay. You just tell me the names and you tell me the order, and that it's Quentin Nelson, Joel Bitonio, Ali Marpet, Elgton Jenkins. I don't like it, but I'm okay with it. But then you show me the vote totals. You show me that Elgton Jenkins, who I think was the best guard in the league this year, so much so that he went above and beyond the position, really. I think he allowed one sack all year. Was it one or I think it was two?
Yeah, I think so.
Two sacks for a guy that played, what, 99% of the snaps this season?
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is because he moved around so much, where I would give him more votes because he did that. Yeah, I'm speechless on it. You know, Quentin Nelson, he gets it because of name recognition, but not even take Packer bias out of it. But as much as I saw Jenkins, you can't tell me that anybody played better than he did this year. There's no argument for that.
This is regular season two, not playoffs, but I didn't think Nelson played good at all in the Bills game in the wild card round. I thought there were times when Veldier seemed to be the better offensive lineman moving that left side. So I don't know if Nelson's hurt, maybe. But even if he is, he is not, like, he didn't play as well this year as last year. And the entire Colts offensive line, I think, took a step back from a run blocking perspective. I mean, entering the season, we thought the Colts were the best offensive line in the league, right?
Yeah, they're right there. Tennessee, when they're healthy, is there too. But yeah, probably the Colts.
And because they, you know, entering the season especially, not knowing how well the rookie Wright played this year for them at right tackle. But losing Jack Conklin, I would have thought, okay, I think the Titans might take a step back there. But I think regardless of how you view it, like, I think there's unequivocally no one said the Colts weren't a top five offensive line entering the year.
No doubt.
They ranked 20th. In adjusted line yards, 4.23, 20th. We're talking, they ranked lower than the Detroit Lions offensive line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Lions aren't that bad.
That's true. Well, I mean, they're 19th, right? I mean, they're better than the Colts, right? So from a running perspective, and I mean, like, okay, so here they're between the Lions and the Giants. Like, as an offensive line, the Colts really shouldn't be between those two. And I know that the Giants made some progress this year, having the rookie Andrew Thomas, and it maybe have helped. But like, to me, that's a massive disappointment for that line. I think part of that starts with Quentin Nelson.
Yeah. Like you said, he did not perform like he did the year before. Not to say he performed badly, because the guy still is elite, but he wasn't that dominant guy, you know, that he was the year before. And just watching when the Packers played the Colts, you know, Kenny Clark's a stud, don't get me wrong, but he at times dominated Quentin Nelson. You know, again, Kenny Clark's good, but just watching Nelson on a lot of plays, he wasn't getting the push he normally does. He wasn't getting out to the second level. Quarterback change? Is that why this line took a dip? I mean, you can't really say that. I don't know. But yeah, Jenkins should be there. And I don't want to blame Quentin Nelson for that. I'm just upset. And like, again, maybe they should start a new award and have the utility lineman award. And because Jenkins moving around, maybe that's what hurt him with this voting. But if I had a vote, that would make me vote for him because of what that guy could do as a lineman.
To that, Jesse, I would say I think you could make the argument it would have hurt him if he got votes at different offensive line spots, if he got a vote at center, right? But it doesn't seem like that was the case. Like, it literally, out of 50 NFL writers who supposedly watched the game and watched these players enough to vote on them, only two of them thought Elgton Jenkins was one of the two best guards in the NFL. Which baffles my mind, makes me think, what were they watching this year? Because the problem is, it's definitely not Quentin Nelson. You want to put Ali Marpet on the list instead of only giving him 7 votes because of how the Buccaneers turned around. And so Football Outsiders adjusted line yards is really looking at the run game offense. They also have their adjusted sack rate, which will, you know, what you were saying, Jesse, the quarterback change, I think, would come into effect there. But the quarterback change shouldn't affect their ranking in adjusted line yards. And I mean, to be fair, the Colts were 7th in adjusted sack rate. So they were protecting Phillip Rivers really well, pass protection wise, probably the best pass protection Phillip Rivers has ever had in his career, really. So they were still capable, but I do wonder, you know, pass protection, that's more on the tackles. Costanzo had a great season this year. And so it seemed like really that push for the interior from the run game is really where it was failing. I know I have was quite high on Jonathan Taylor, especially from a fantasy football perspective this year. So I had quite a lot of him in leagues, and was watching every time I watch Colts games early. You know, my eyes are on Taylor. I want to see Taylor do well. And I just kept seeing plays where he's getting tackled in the backfield constantly over and over again. And my thinking is, what is happening to this offensive line? And you see it in the adjusted line yards. They were a top 5 unit last year, down to 20th this year. And again, I think it starts with Nelson. He did not play as well as Jenkins. He did not play as well as Ali Marpet. The Bucs had a really good, like, the Bucs offensive line did the opposite because they were a bad unit. And yeah, Tom Brady really helps that. Their adjusted sack rate, they're 3rd this year, partially because Brady's throwing the ball out so quickly. But they're also 9th in adjusted line yards. Like I said, that has nothing to do with quarterback. So this Buccaneers line improved greatly from a run blocking perspective. And again, part of that, the interior is really key to the run. So to me, Marpet and Jenkins both should have made it ahead of Quentin Nelson. There's no way Quentin Nelson should have more than double the amount of votes between Jenkins and Marpet combined. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And it makes me really questioned, because it's I think the rest of the list is fine. So clearly they know what they're talking about. So why did they get it so wrong at left guard? I almost feel like offensive line tougher to evaluate, and so the writers are a little scared to not name Nelson, like, oh, but he's the best guard, right? We have to name him. I feel like they just kind of got sucked into the name too much there.
I agree. Going back to the Jonathan Taylor thing too, you're right. Like, early in the season, it's like, why can't they get this kid going? And watching Colts games, it wasn't Taylor. Now, Taylor came on strong at the end. He ended up finishing, you know, 4th or 5th in the league in rushing. So he came on stronger. But watching them early, it was like, man, they're not helping this kid out at all. So, and that's, you know, everybody thought when he got drafted, like, man, coming into this line, you know, and then Matt got hurt, obviously. So I didn't think he was going to get a ton of carries. But when he was the guy, I'm like, man, he's going to kill it behind this line. And to your point, the line kind of let him down because he was getting hit at the line of scrimmage in the backfield. They weren't getting that push, right? You know, and Nelson's that bully where, you know, you go back to his screaming thing and all this and pulling guards and just road grading guys. You didn't see that this year. And then the last thing you said, yeah, do all these guys that vote, are they actually watching all this interior line play, or are they just going off of some numbers and some name recognition? It's hard to watch every guard in the league, right? You know, I think they have a list of guys that they really like, and that Quentin Nelson name is a sexy name, and that's not his fault. That's, you know, because he earned that the year before. But I think that's a major part why that happened.
I do wonder if we're going to see Jenkins, even if Jenkins doesn't play as well next year, almost get the correction, right? Now that they're more aware of him, I think. But I just found it so baffling that, you know, I think we could all agree that Bakhtiari, Jenkins, and Lindsley are all maybe the best at their position this year. Like, you can make the argument that any of them could be the best at left tackle, left guard, and center, respectively. You know, Jenkins, really, it doesn't even matter, any position. But to me, you tell me two of those three are going to be all pros, and I don't see this list. My thinking is, oh, okay, well, Jenkins definitely has it because he played the whole season, and they won't, you know, either Lindsley or Bach, because they both missed time, one of them won't get it. But you're telling me the one guy that was healthiest the entire year, that moved around the entire line, that needed to do all sorts of roles, and no matter where he was, excelled, spent most of the year at left guard, and was absolutely dominant to that position, you're telling me that's the guy that doesn't get the all-pro nod? I was baffled.
Yeah, and to your point there, like with Lindsley, like, yeah, he graded out the highest all year long. He was graded out the number one center, graded out this, graded out that. But, you know, him getting hurt, and nobody talks about him. Like, you hear other centers that have been around longer, you know, the Rodney Hudsons and stuff like that, who are great players, right? But, you know, you never heard anybody talk about Corey Lindsley. He's just that lunch pail guy. And then this year he killed it, and I was really surprised they gave it to him. I was. Just, you know, he didn't miss long. They thought he was going to miss a lot more. But that was the name I thought out of the guys, he would have been left off the list. Because Bach earned it, right? Bach, you know, he's just the staple. He's been doing it for so long. And he didn't have a down year. So it's like, that name's out there. But I just don't think the league as a whole, or people outside of maybe even the NFC North, really know Corey Lindsley like that. So that is where they got it right. And I'm happy that they got that one right. But yeah, going back to the Nelson one, it's like, okay, how'd you guys drop the ball here?
Well, the other thing with Bach is who you're going to take over him. Like, I'm looking at the other guys that got votes. Garrett Bowles, Trent Williams, Teron Armstead, Laremy Tunsil, Eric Fisher. Like, none of those guys even come close to touching Bach. I'm surprised Garrett Bowles is a second team All-Pro, right? Like, just... But it's so hard to play left tackle. Like, I mean, then I went back and thought, who would be the left tackle? Like, who really is that number two if it's not Garrett Bowles? And I had a hard time coming up with an answer. Really,
Ronnie Stanley's probably the other. He got hurt this year, but he's the only other guy that I can say, like, wow, that guy is dominant. You know, Bowles had a great year from, you know, starting his career, you know, really bad, coming on strong. But yeah, outside of Bach, if Ronnie Stanley's playing, like, if I could pick two guys, those are the only two. And then there's a big drop off for me.
And because Stanley didn't even get a vote, I'm thinking he didn't play long enough to be eligible. Like, that was one where they okay, well, he was hurt too much. We can't really give it to him on half a season. Otherwise, you're right, he would have been. Because, yeah, like, there's no way Laremy Tunsil played better than Ronnie Stanley last year.
No way. No way.
That's the All-Pro list. So I mentioned the Packers who made the list. Obviously, mentioned Elgton Jenkins got votes but didn't get on. Two more Packers players also got votes but weren't on the list. Mason Crosby got a vote for place kicker, and Adrian Amos for safety. Do you want to mention anything about Amos? What do you think about the safety voting?
I think he deserves it. I'm happy that he's not sexy, but he's so assignment sure. So he might not do, which he, you know, had some big picks this year. But it's not like, you know, you look at the names that got it, you know, you got Tyron on there and you got Minkah Fitzpatrick and you got Buda Baker, who, you know, they had those big splash plays. But I think Amos, you know, and the way we move him around, he comes down in the box and can do that. He's just Mr. Consistent. So that's cool that he got votes. But it was hard to top those other guys because those other guys are game changers too. But okay, I mean, if we want to be, you know, I'll be a homer here and say I think we have the best pair in the league, especially the second half. So it's good to see you got votes.
It's funny because, again, blind before going in, you tell me, oh, a Packers safety will get all pro votes but won't make the list. If you just tell me that, I would have thought it was Savage. If you asked me who had the better season between Amos and Savage, I'd say Savage. So it's tough for me to say that Amos got snubbed because I don't think he should have got 6 votes. I think Savage should have got 6 votes or 8 votes. Like, so that was the only thing for me. It was strange to see that Amos got it, not Savage, just because I think this year, entering last season, entering 2019, the talk was, oh, we're going to play Amos and Savage kind of like the Patriots do with McCourty and Chung. Like, you'll never know who's the strong and free safety. But we saw Savage as the free safety a lot more. And I did wonder, oh, what? Why is that? And then there were times where Amos playing the free safety, I think, missed some assignments or wasn't quite as certain. Like, it seemed like or maybe just the limited range of speed, like the top end. It just seemed to me that Savage is more well-rounded, that he can fully accomplish both goals to the best of his abilities, where the more I saw this year, the more I really feel like Adrian Amos is best as a strong safety. So I think that's my reasoning why I would have gone Savage.
Yeah, well, Savage started off a little rougher too, so that's where I think it hurt him, because the second half of the year, Savage, I mean, he's elite. Like, that's a field tilter. But starting off early, you could tell, you know, he was still unsure. You know, then once they put him in that robber role where they just let him, you know, play where he wants to and bait guys into throwing the ball, Savage went off. Yeah, so if we're going half seasons, yeah, Savage was great. But Amos was just Mr. Consistent to me. So, you know, just he was a Simon Shore. He could come down in the box. I mean, look at Jamal Adams. He's on it because of all his sacks, and he was essentially a linebacker. He didn't play safety this year. He's actually really not good in coverage. He was, you know, kind of a weapon linebacker. So, but Jesse Bates, on the other hand, plays that true center field role, and he was awesome at it. So it's just how the Packers use him, where, you know, Amos might not be – I'm happy he got votes because it was noticed, but, yeah, he's not, like, flashy. Like, Savage athletically, and the sky's the limit. Yeah, that guy's going to be all-pro more than once, I think, if he keeps playing like this. So – Amos might not have that flash and that all that good stuff like that, but the guy's a dang good football player.
That actually is a really good point. I did kind of forget how much Savage did struggle at the start of the year. So, okay, maybe you actually do make a good point of the consistency of Amos might more deserving to be on the list. So I'll concede there. Maybe they did get it right. I was surprised Jamal Adams, though, made the list. I really was, because, I mean, he did get hurt too as well, so I didn't think that was that one where they were just going to kind of not vote him as strong there, and he got 14 votes. Like he didn't finish that far off of the first team, so that was a little surprising to me. Because which I suppose, yeah, if you're gonna get 10 sacks, it's almost like Xavier Howard. You're gonna get 10 picks, you just have to make it, right?
Yeah, and like I said, like, he was basically a linebacker, so it was. I don't know. The NFL's so different now, where there's like not true positions for some of these guys. So it's like, okay, yeah, he had a. Like they said, the most sacks ever from a safety. I'm like, well, he's not a safety anymore. He's a linebacker. But whatever, it is what it is.
Well, that's the way that cookie crumbles. And now we are officially in divisional week. The Packers will play the Rams. So that's interesting there. But so quickly to recap what happened wild card weekend. On the AFC side, the Bills beat the Colts 27-24. Nail biter came down close to the end. The Ravens beat the Titans 20-13. Another nail biter close to the end. I don't know, the surprise of the weekend for sure, I think. The Browns beat the Steelers 48-37. So any comments about the AFC playoffs, Jesse?
Those first two games you said were really fun, hard-fought games. Yeah, just good football. I thought the Bills game was a lot closer than I thought, because I think the Bills are a tough out. I mean, the Bills are my pick to go from the AFC, by the way. But yeah, good games. Pittsburgh's not dang good. Good for the Browns, first of all, with all the adversities they've been through lately and all that. Good for them. They came. They took advantage of mistakes early, capitalized, almost looked like they were going to give it away. But, you know, they still got it done. But, man, Pittsburgh, I think, has some questions to be answered this offseason, because – that team the last month has been a hot mess, to be nice.
I won't be nice, and I'll say Ben's starting to look like Drew Brees, to where the ends of seasons just tail off. Now, this really was the first year. Honestly, I'm shocked Ben Roethlisberger did as well as he did to start the year. Coming off the major elbow surgery, I thought that they almost passed too much in the end of the year. I think it really started to fall off. And when your quarterback's not playing well, it will be felt on the rest of your team. And they had, you know, they've had a bunch of injuries on defense, too. Good key starters on defense that are out for the year. So I think at a certain point, I was surprised when Devin Bush got hurt, actually, that they were able to maintain. Because I remember a couple years ago when Ryan Shazier had that career-ending injury. That season, they were one of the top defensive units. And the very next game, they were one of the worst. Like, without Shazier, they were nothing, it seemed like. They just collapsed completely without his presence. That didn't happen with Devin White this year. Devin Bush, sorry. I always confuse those two. Yeah, so I think, I think it's the quarterback.
Yeah, well, so the scheme, the start to lead, you know, the year when they went, what, 10-0 or whatever before it started going downhill, they were getting out the ball quick. Everything, like, they led the league in the shortest passes. It was coming out quick, making quick plays. And you saw the second half, teams started adjusting, saying, you know what, we're going to start playing tight coverage, try to start beating us over the top consistently. They couldn't do it. Ben had to start holding on to the ball longer. He had to start thinking. And that's where you start seeing the lot of issues with him, right? Yeah, the Drew Brees thing, like you said, you don't see the arm went dead. Well, yeah, it went dead because he actually had to put it in the air a little bit more down the field. So I think teams just really said, you know, we're going to come out and play tight. They can't run the football. They're the worst running team in the league, which, you know, that's not Pittsburgh, right? And then, yeah, on defense, really good front seven. Bud Dupree getting hurt really hurt them, I thought. Their line's really good right up front, but it just caught up to them. You know, they started losing time of possession and guys getting tired. And just they got exposed. So, but I back to the Browns. That team showed a lot of poise and guts, man. Like, everybody counted them out, and they're not going to get through with all this mess going on and all that, which – you know, 30 years ago, yeah, they might not have the resources and technology where they can still have their coach be a part of it from afar. But they really showed a lot of courage, and I tip my hat to that team. That was cool.
It's almost like the players, in spite of the history of the Browns and everything that was happening with the coaches, they just ignore that and said, we're going to win this game. We will take it to this division rival that's taken it to us and given it to us how many times over and over again. The Browns keep losing to the Steelers, right? So this was time to reverse so much. You really kind of felt like the team really, even though the fans weren't in the stadium, they were even closer to the fans than ever before. Or they just won the game and we're just adding nice colorful things behind it and they just played better.
Yeah, I think it's all of the above. You know, now if they go and shock the world next week against Kansas City, maybe we, you know, revisit this. But yeah, everything, you know, that franchise just needed a big signature win, and it was against their, you know, essentially for the last 30 years, their big brother. So, yeah, good for them.
28 points in the first quarter, the most ever in playoff history in a quarter. And it's the Browns. 100 years of NFL football and the highest scoring quarter in playoff history is the Browns.
So what, they had 21 in the first, like, what, 6-7 minutes? It was crazy.
So moving on to the NFC side. We have the, as I already mentioned, the Rams, who will be playing the Packers. They beat the Seahawks 30-20. Another road win. Not the underdogs this time, though. They were the favorites. But the Buccaneers, 31-23 against Washington. And then the Saints, 21-9 against our dear rivals, the Bears, who I guess finally scored a touchdown at the end, literally at the end of the game. I just want to say about that. Did Mitch Trubisky even make one mistake in that game? I figured if he played a perfect game and the defense was able to hold the Saints down, that they would win. It was everyone else that kept messing up, though. I think for once, Trubisky was really the victim of the rest of the team. Like, instead of him kind of letting the team down, the rest of the team really let Trubisky down.
Yeah, I mean, was he spectacular? No, but like you said, he did enough where he wasn't the problem. I mean, between drop balls and just constant mistakes, they couldn't run the football. You know, it was a perfect storm. That, you know, with Mooney not playing, I know he was my X factor. With him not playing, it really showed that team, you know, it hurt. I didn't think that the Saints were going to hold them that low, but yeah, the Bears just couldn't get out of their own way. And I'll say on defense too, you know, Khalil Mack, I got into the guy yesterday, you know, he's still saying, you know, Mack's the best guy in the league and all this. I'm like, not the last 2 years. He hasn't showed up in any of their playoff games. I mean, he's the field tilter. At one time, Taysom Hill blocked him. I mean, come on, man. If you're the best, they need you more. He had, what, one pressure? So that hurts.
Yeah, I was saying the key to this game is Mack and Hicks. Can you do what Danelle Hunter and Everson Griffin did last year? To be fair, I thought the first half they did. They were disrupting Breeze, but then the Saints adjusted, and, you know, kudos to the coaching and the offensive line as well for really stepping up in the second half. But, yeah, the Bears had no answer, no adjustment. It's funny how the Bears situation almost mirrors the Eagles a little bit. You know, quarterback, is he the franchise guy or not? Everyone's wondering about the coach of the GM. No word yet on the Bears, now that their season is officially done, on if they are in fact retaining Pace and Nagy or even Trubisky. I don't know if you've heard anything, Jesse, but what are your expectations for the Bears just with that this year?
I really don't know. I mean, I think I want them to keep all those guys, but I really have no idea what route they're going to go. I don't know. I'm so mixed on Trubisky, where you might as well just keep him another year, but it all depends on what you do with coach. I don't think Nagy's a good coach. I really don't. I think it was a gimmick offense from the beginning, and it worked good early. And now it doesn't. They have some nice pieces, but yeah, it'll be really interesting what they do. I don't know. I think it's 50-50 all the way around with that franchise.
I almost want to say, like, if you get rid of Nagy and Trubisky, like, to me, those are hiring Nagy and you know, drafting Trubisky, those are really Pace's only two mistakes. Like, he's built a really good team around, just other than the head coach of the quarterback, but those two things are so important.
I think the Mac trade was a mistake too. I really do. I mean, you gave up so much draft capital. You were basically going all in, saying Trubisky's our guy, Nagy's our coach, we need one piece, we're going all in, and we're gonna, you know, basically sell the future for the next 3 years. And that's what they did, you know. And that's not to say Mac's not a great football player. That guy is great. He's top five. He's awesome. But that move was push all the chips into the middle. They went all in. And guess what? When your quarterback doesn't turn out to be that guy, you know, and then you don't have the draft capital to keep building and add a few playmakers here and there, and then you're tight with your cap space, it's a perfect storm, and it didn't work.
That's true. Good point. You've made that point before on the podcast as well, that you really were opposed to the contract simply because the team wasn't quite ready for it. We thought they were, but the team isn't ready yet. And like you said, Jesse, like, you're hoping that they almost do keep Pace and Nagy. I especially hope they keep Nagy, because, like, I do think Pace is a good GM, but Nagy really, what, like, unfortunately, though, the Nagy decision isn't good. And then how do we know Pace is going to hire the next head coach properly, right? Like, that's the, again, we're Packers fans. We don't care about that, but we don't care what the Bears do. I almost want them to clean house just so they have to restart. And then that suddenly that takes them out of contention for a year. But, I mean, Nagy might do that for them anyway.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, going back, you know, to the GM, you're right. I think he's tried to put the pieces in, like, hey, we don't think, you know, Trubisky's the guy. Not saying Nick Foles is great, but he's like, hey, let's keep throwing something at the board. We got to, all you need is decent at QB, right? Because they play good defense, they can run the football. And it seemed like Nagy, like, why isn't Montgomery touching the ball more? I get it. I was hard on him early, and his yards per carry weren't great, but why haven't you built this offensive line around a good running attack and then go play defense? Old school Bears, right? And it seems like Nagy just wants to play this offense that they shouldn't be playing.
It almost takes a different quarterback, doesn't it? I mean, Trubisky came in very little experience in college, just the 1 year as the starter. And then he sat for the first month as a rookie, and then he's played ever since. Then, he, you know, this year he actually did get to sit and maybe learn. And he came out almost maybe a little better from that, having, again, so little time to really study and improve the game for him before he got to the NFL. He's kind of almost having to do that now, when that should have already happened beforehand. So it's, you know, poor decisions by Trubisky. I guess it might have been a poor decision to come out of that draft class.
Yeah, exactly.
Which turned out to be the greatest quarterback class of all, and no one knew it.
Yeah, you're right. And they missed out on two studs, but and they traded up with whatever. We're not even going to get into that move that the Niners did to them.
49ers. Don't you love when they mess up other teams, not this NFC North team?
Yeah.
But anyway, this NFC North team will be playing in divisional week. As mentioned, they'll be playing the Rams Saturday. Maybe it's 4:30 Eastern time. So they kick off divisional weekend by hosting the Rams. So that'll be interesting. Our next podcast will really dive into that game in particular. Until then, though, if you have anything you'd like to hear on that next episode as well, let us know on Twitter at @FPC_Packers. Jesse's at @Hall_JHall1212. I'm at Senra Says. As always, download the Full Press Coverage app. It's available for free on Android and iOS stores. This Full Press Coverage app allows you access to all of our written content at Full Press Coverage, all the great podcasts we produce, as well as access to the Full Press Radio Network. So the Full Press Coverage app, it's free. Again, download that on all your app stores. Any wild thoughts for this wild card weekend to end the episode, Jesse?
No, it was a fun week of football. Got to actually sit back and enjoy it without, any stress levels or blood pressure rising. So that was good. I just hope the weather gods, it's supposed to be 80 some degrees in LA this weekend.
I really hope it's going to be under 20 at Lambeau. Go Pack, go.
Yes. I'm almost hope. Okay. Get the win out of the way and then you can watch the last three games without stressing. I think that's the key this weekend, but it all starts with a win. So, we'll be covering all that next time on the Full Press Packers Pod.